The Virtually Strange Network presents Strange Days Indeed, your premier source for UFO information, with your host, Errol Bruce Knapp.
Yes, that would be me, and these are strange days indeed, and this program reflects those strange days indeed. Our topic, UFOs, induces interest or denial and mostly ambivalence. But there's something going on here, Mr. Jones. Tonight, Dave Furlott with his take on it, our British correspondent and publisher of UFO Review, Stuart Miller, and former United States Air Force Missile Silo Deputy Commander Robert Salas will join us from his home in California in the second hour, and Alfred Lemberg will take us home. Victor Vigiani will also join us in the second hour. Some interesting UFO reports, albeit they vague and consequently not too comprehensive, which is always really frustrating, but that's what happens when people report them to websites and often fail to put in detail, which they probably remember, but those websites don't have a fully comprehensive questionnaire or sightings report form. Witness out of Toronto here says that they saw something that struck them as odd on November the 2nd at around 6:42 in the evening, dark already, remember, while out for a walk with their infant son. At around 6:42, out of the corner of their eye, they spotted a white streak that upon focusing on it, it went across the horizon till it was obscured by trees. Witness said it seemed whiter and brighter than a meteor or a shooting star. Our thanks to Brian Vike for that one. And out of Halifax, Nova Scotia, a witness was out having a smoke on a balcony overlooking the Bedford Basin and the Mackay Bridge on November 2nd at around 11:15 that night. The witness was looking up and saw something that caught their eye. It had a three-angled chevron shape. It was completely silent and dark and didn't appear to be lit up. The witness noticed a red sort of diamond shapes on it. This was nothing like an aircraft and flew in half an arc, flew a barrel roll, and then it disappeared. As I said, not very comprehensive reports, but hey, at least we are getting them. What was that? A three-angled chevron shape. Now, is that a triangle or is that a chevron? Well, chevrons, I guess, have two angles, unless you count the ones on the outer edge. And to Dooley Lake, Manitoba, in September, a family saw a white light like a star low in the sky near the village of Tadouli Lake. After a few minutes of observation, it suddenly took off. And later, when the general area where the light had been was examined, there were three rings of dead grass on the ground. The rings varied from 6 to 10 feet in diameter and puzzled the family because they were devoid of any moss and other vegetation. What was even more stranger, one of the rings went completely around a good-sized tree. So no moss or grass on the ground in the other rings, but in the middle of this ring, is a full-size tree. Go figure, huh? Also back in September at around 1:30 a.m. local time in Winnipeg, a witness in Garden City saw a big ball of light that seems to be orbiting over the city. Yeah. Now, she was certain the object was not a searchlight, as it seemed to be going in and out of the clouds, and then began cloud jumping. Oh, yeah, like we haven't seen any of those in this city, huh? Every night you can see them. Yeah, it's searchlights. The sighting occurred just after a severe electrical storm, and the witness considered the possibility that the object could have been ball lightning. Oh, yeah, not searchlights, though. Could be ball lightning. Bouncing off the clouds and jumping from cloud to cloud. Never seen a searchlight do that. A witness was in the west part of St. John, New Brunswick, looking toward the western horizon on the 5th of September, and saw an unusual object approximately 20 or 30 degrees up in the night sky. It had three distinct sections. The upper section was round with orange lights. The midsection was narrow with two bright lights in the center. And the lower section was round with white lights around the outer edge. The object was approximately the size of an airplane, and after approximately 1 minute, the object darted quickly to the right and was lost to sight. And in Epiphany, Quebec, on the 16th of September, at around 10 to 1 in the morning, several villagers living in and around Epiphany, Quebec, reported seeing a large white circle in the sky. It was estimated to be a quarter mile in diameter, with what appeared to be small clouds emerging from its underside. See another spotlight or searchlight. No, not. The object seemed to be spinning, sometimes one way, sometimes another. It moved sometimes slow and sometimes fast, but never moving over a great distance. Interesting. And I wonder how they lost sight of it, if it flew out of sight or it just faded away. Incomplete report. On the 10th of October, a family was driving to Kelowna from Penticton and had just reached Summerland. This is Brian Vike country. When they all saw a group of six white lights moving together as if they were on a large object. It was heading north over the lake, but in a split second it was suddenly further over the lake and turned 180 degrees so it would head south, now with only two or three lights visible. And the entire observation took about 10 to 15 seconds. Interesting report. And all of these subsequent reports come from Chris Rutkowski, the publisher of the Canadian UFO Survey, along with Jeff Dipman. Ville la Baie in Quebec, on the 24th of October at around 4:30 in the afternoon, an aluminum-colored object about one-quarter the size of an airplane was seen stationary and low in an overcast sky. It was observed for 30 minutes, and then who knows what happened, because, once again, it's an incomplete report. Keep talking about incomplete reports. It's frustrating. If you're going to go to a website and report a UFO, then put it all there. How it disappeared, you know. Go to virtuallystrange.net, go to MUFON Ontario. There's a very nice UFO reporting form there that you can fill out and send off to the MUFON Ontario people. And if you fill that out properly, your report will by no means be incomplete.
Here with his take on it, here's Dave Furlong.
There's an interesting thread on the UFO updates list this past week called Nuclear Bombs Over Canada. And it's generated some considerable comment from the list members. The original poster of this thread, of course, was Nick Belaskis. And in the thread, he talks about a couple of accidents that occurred in Canada with USAF bombers and nuclear bombs that they were carrying. Albeit, the thread at first read begins to look like the Americans were dropping bombs at leisure on Canadian soil. The reality is that there were a couple of accidents that occurred involving nuclear bombs, but there were no nuclear detonations. Let me repeat that. There were no nuclear detonations or extreme nuclear fallout from the resultant accidents. The incidents that Nick refers to happened in the 50s and 60s, and of course, there was a considerable cover-up by both the United States and the Canadian governments dealing with these things. The U.S. covered it up because, well, bottom line, they were red-faced at such accidents taking place, especially on the soil of a friendly ally. Our government covered it up because they tell us that Canada is a nuclear-free area, meaning that all aircraft and ships from the United States that come into Canada are not carrying any nuclear weaponry aboard. Right? Just before the U.S. cruisers come into a Canadian port for a visit, they stop in international waters and offload their nuclear arsenal onto a nearby tugboat or something, right? You believe that one? I have some really nice land up in the Northwest Territories that you might wish to buy. Now, the most important part of all of this is that there has been considerable discussion about the workings of nuclear bombs and radioactive fallout. A lot of people are under the impression that nuclear bombs are very delicate things, and the slightest little thing will set them off. In fact, nuclear bombs have to be armed prior to detonation, and if they're not armed, any explosion that happens will not be a nuclear reaction, but simply a very messy, high-explosive type of thing. The radioactive fallout from an explosion of that type will be minimal compared to what it would have been in the event of a thermonuclear explosion. But there is still some fallout. It is the same type of fallout that would be created in the event of an explosion of what is termed a dirty atomic bomb, which is the one that's most feared to be in the hands of terrorists. It's been interesting seeing the ongoing discussion in the thread. However, it really has absolutely nothing to do with UFOs. I believe that Nick was trying to kind of tie this in with Paul Hellyer, the former Minister of Defense, who came out saying he believes in UFOs and should have some knowledge of these accidents, and then tying some pictures of the 50s or 60s era, combining U.S. officers who have been associated with the UFO cover-up into the mix. Bottom line, it really is a thread that needs to come to an end because the discussion really asks more questions than it answers. The one issue that does tie it all in with UFOs is the reality of the cover-up. Our government, that of Canada, working in concert with the government and military arm of the United States to keep all knowledge of these accidents away from all of us. I know for a fact that some of our military personnel were instructed to not discuss these events and to completely forget whatever they saw. In the interest of public safety, we should have been told about these accidents, if for even no other reason than to keep us away from the contamination at the site and to make sure that we knew that our government was doing everything in its power to clean up the mess. Bottom line, if they're going to cover up and lie about something that impacts the citizenry of this country so directly, would it be any wonder that they would cover up and keep secret any information that they have regarding UFOs and alien beings? It's time that our government started treating us like adults and not children. But that's just my take on it.
Dave Vermont, every week at this time. Strange days, indeed.
Oh, yes, definitely strange days, my old furry darling. Hey, and speaking of Paul Hellyer, TV Ontario recorded Mr. Hellyer's address at the UFO Symposium back on September 24th. And that aired today at 1 o'clock and will also air again tomorrow at 1 o'clock on TV Ontario in the Big Ideas series.
Ah.
Yeah, Mr. Hellyer's in about 55 minutes into that, so...
Excellent.
Quarter to two-ish is a good time to turn it on, although the lecturer who speaks before him at Rye High... at Ryerson University is a history prof and a fascinating historical retrospective of Russia and the rest of the Allies during the Second World War. Interesting stuff. Paul Hellyer's speech. Tomorrow you can grab yourself a copy of it and commit it to digital or videotape if you're still using that.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it for posterity.
Yes, definitely to watch it, because Mr. Hellyer, being the former defense minister,
mm-hmm.
has some very interesting things to say about UFOs.
Yes, he does. And Colonel Philip Corso and Alfred Weber. And... yes.
Yeah. Oh, well.
However, yeah, exciting week planned, Dave?
I don't know if it's going to be exciting or not. We shall see.
Mm-hmm.
We shall see. I'm still battling with a publisher right now that hasn't made up their mind in over 20 months.
Oh, but you can't take it to anybody else till they've made up their minds.
That's correct.
Mm-hmm. Well, bon chance, mon ami.
Merci, monsieur.
Okay, we'll talk to you next week, Dave.
For sure.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you.
Good night.
Good night.
And it's this time we go over to the UK, and Stuart Miller joins us here on program 368. Good evening, Stuart.
Good evening, Errol. Why are you coughing?
I thought you were. I heard down the line.
Oh, I'm sorry.
That's all right. He just woke you up, didn't he?
No. I'm wide awake. He just left it till virtually the last.
Yes, minute. He did. Yes, he did. We like to live dangerously in live radio here.
Very
That's...
intense.
Yeah. Oh, and you didn't catch the news or any of the nifty commercials or anything.
He didn't, or I didn't.
No, you didn't.
I did. I was listening on the internet.
Oh, you were. Oh, good. Well, that's good.
Yeah.
I think good signal there.
Yes.
Better than AM, huh?
Yes, it is actually. Yes, it's a good clear. I only remember ever having a problem with the streaming once.
Mm-hmm.
No, otherwise the quality is excellent.
Stuart Miller, a British correspondent and a regular monthly contributor to this program, publishes a UFO Review, and the new issue is out.
It is. It's out, filled with fun-packed. A fabulous interview with Lauren Coleman, the cryptozoologist.
Mm-hmm.
A very, very nice man and a very clever man as well.
Yes, had him on the program several times, both on here and on the other program I used to do.
Indeed.
Nice
yes.
man, yeah.
Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And an interesting career. And also an interview, a major interview with Linda Moulton Howe.
Ah.
Did
you ask her why she supported the Urandir caper, for a chance?
I'm staggered that you've gone straight for that one, actually, Errol. Let me put it to you this way.
Go ahead.
It is rare when I conduct an interview for UFO Review, after I've completed the interview, it is rare for me to...
go back?
Edit out.
Ah.
Chunks of the interview.
Uh-huh.
I mean, obviously, there are alterations and edits and corrections and that sort of thing.
Hmm.
I had to excise a chunk of the interview with Linda Moulton Howe.
Oh.
Not a substantial chunk, a couple of paragraphs.
Uh-huh.
In connection with the matter that you just mentioned.
Oh. When you do the interviews, do you use the phone and the tape machine, or do you email back and forth?
Almost exclusively, it's a telephone interview, and the conversation is recorded.
Mm.
There have been a couple of interviews that I've done, interestingly, both with Brits, which have been done...
Pennies a call.
which have been done by email.
Uh-huh. I'm wondering whether I should pursue the excision anymore, or should I just let
If it wasn't fit for printing, then it's certainly not fit for broadcasting.
Oh, it didn't involve me at all, did it?
Oh, no.
No. Well, so... Well, we featured it, largely on UFO Updates a year or so back.
Yeah.
And on this program, too. We had AJ on here, and... I guess Linda wasn't talking to me at that point.
Yeah, I'd rather not go any further with that.
Oh, now you've got everybody's curiosity piqued. Okay, so, the silly news story, and I cracked up, was the tinfoil helmets.
Yes. Well, it's one interesting point about this, actually, was that the version of the story that you posted on updates that I sent you is not the same version or from the same source.
No. What the link that you sent me, Stuart Miller provides UFO updates with a lot of the news links that that we put out every day. The link that you sent me led me to the story, the original story, out of wherever it was, allegedly...
National Business Review, believe it or not.
Yeah, well, it was National Business Review, but which pointed to this website. I grabbed the article from the originating website rather than from the National Business Review.
Well, the reason I mention it is it was because the way the story was written up on the National Business Review was, in my opinion, quite objective. Mm. There wasn't any tone or side to it at all. On the website or where the article was originally sourced from, there is a tone and an air to it of, I have to say, I think... mocking in nature.
Oh yeah, well, absolutely. I mean, it was very, very much done several tongues in one cheek. Tinfoil hats for warding off nasty thoughts, aliens, preventing alien abductions, whatever tinfoil is good for.
Well, no, really. Actually, to stop people wearing them, to stop.
Radio interference?
Mind control. Allegedly government mind control.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Exactly the sort of thing, actually, that one of UFO update subscribers
originally
comes from.
Yes, and a local to this neighborhood, actually.
Right.
Yes.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
But the interesting thing was that this study was done by MIT. They concluded, actually, that the manufacturer of these hats is probably a government conspiracy. on the basis that, scientifically it seems, these hats do not block out the signals, but if anything, attenuate them.
Attenuate them, unless they're grounded, according to the subsequent discussion on the UFO updates list today.
Right.
Mm-hmm.
So... if people wear them thinking that they're going to block out these radio transmissions, that they appear to be mistaken.
Hmm. Well, that's too bad.
Well, a lot of people take this very seriously.
I know they do. A lot of people are they're convinced, and they firmly believe that they're being harassed by either government agencies or individuals with access to Grind.
Yes.
Electronic harassment. And can prove it, too, in a lot of cases.
Yes. I mean...
It's bizarre, but, I mean, there's many, many strange things in this world.
Yeah, the radio frequencies are very interesting. They're supposed to be reserved for government use. Is it GPS?
Mm-hmm.
Navigation, yes.
Yeah.
And obviously...
Well, we had this lovely incident, and I'm sure you read about it on the net in Ottawa, where suddenly people's garage door openers quit working.
Yes.
And they were all in the vicinity of the United States Embassy in Ottawa.
Indeed.
And the United States Embassy was running new transmitters for whatever the reason, and they were interfering with the garage door openers, the wireless remotes. And once that became a well-known fact that the garage door openers in Ottawa were not functioning as they used to, then suddenly that frequency went quiet and everybody's garage doors started functioning normally again.
Indeed.
Hmm.
Indeed. So these things are, I guess, possible.
Yeah, seemingly.
Yeah.
Hmm. There. What else have you been looking at this week? Oh, in the month? It's been a month since last we talked.
It has been a full month, yes.
Amazing.
Yeah. Something strange is going on at Bufora, the British UFO research.
I saw that they've got a new website up, and they had an extraordinary membership meeting this morning in London.
Yes, I think it's today.
The British UFO Research Association.
The chairman is being very secretive about what's going on, but the rumor is that they are changing from a membership-based setup to a subscription-based setup. Now, big deal, but I think it means that members' voting rights are affected.
Hmm.
Now, why that should be deemed to be necessary, I don't know.
It's a power grab.
Well, it could well be. Yeah, yeah.
I'm being silly.
Well, no, it's they have actually undergone a very, very rough time over the last
few
years.
Yes, yeah, yeah.
They are the butt of all sorts of jokes and criticisms and so on and so forth, which they seem to take in their stride.
Mm.
But I think it's because people are disappointed that they don't offer more leadership, they're not more sort of adventurous in areas of research and so on and so forth. They don't, you know, they are a national organization and you wouldn't know they were there most of the time.
Hmm.
And it's probably their biggest critic is Andy Roberts.
He's everybody's biggest critic.
And he in particular has given them a real rough time. But I think it's done, actually, in Andy's case. I think, although he is very cruel, I think it's done from affection, actually.
Really?
Well, I think
it's that northern Yorkshire affection is what you're saying. I've experienced that myself, you know. I've watched them with sheep.
Errol.
No, I have. I mean, the shepherds are just amazing up there on the moors. Yeah. I lived in Harrogate, well, outside Harrogate in Yorkshire for 3 years.
Right.
Yes.
Very genteel.
Under those dry stone dikes. Anyway, we shall break. We shall return with Stuart Miller. And while you await our return, why don't you go and check out UFO Review. It's available online. It's free. And it is at uforeview.net. But it's a wonderful service that Stuart provides. And a great ufological e-magazine is what UFO Review is. And there, I think we did pretty much did the helmet to death.
Can I just quickly go over a couple of things I should have done at the very beginning?
Of course.
Can I firstly congratulate you on getting into your eighth year?
Oh, thank you.
And can I also congratulate you on that marvelous new picture you've got on the website of Alfred? You make him look, I must say, extremely cuddly.
Well, he is a cuddly man. I didn't make him do anything.
Well, I'm glad you said that, because I just had a dreadful feeling it was just me that thought that.
No, he is a cuddly man, and actually the Norm and a few other people have emailed me and said, boy, he's a cuddly-looking guy. He's not at all as bombastic as I thought he might be, you know. He doesn't look that way anyway, not the way he comes off in email. Yeah, but that's Alfred Lemberg. That's the way he looks.
Oh, yes. No, I've seen a picture of Alfred before.
Yeah, did you mouse over the various parts of the image?
No.
Ah. See, there are little Easter eggs buried in the image.
Should I be worried or should I be interested?
No, you should be interested.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay, I'll give it a go.
Let your mouse do the walking over various parts of the image. I bet Lemberg hasn't done this either, and he's doing it now before he comes on the radio. So we are almost out of time.
Well, then I shall very briefly tell you how I spent my afternoon today.
How did you spend your afternoon today, Stuart?
I had a very, very enjoyable conversation with Nick Pope.
Oh, the lovely Nick.
Yep, the man that used to sit on the UFO desk at the Ministry of Defence.
Britain,
I need to warn you now that you are going to suffer in the next few weeks, leading up to Christmas and probably just beyond, a surfeit of stories about Rendlesham, because it is the 25th anniversary of the incident at Rendlesham on December the 27th, 28th.
Mm-hmm.
And
I think I heard a BBC program just this past week on Rendlesham.
You did?
Yeah.
Not the involving Nick?
Yeah, there was... No, not the one involving Nick. It was somebody else, but there were a couple of programs that came my way this week from the Beeb. And I think maybe you supplied one of them. One of
the ones. Yeah. That was the abduction one.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was a very, very interesting interview, actually. one of the things he said, we didn't just discuss Rendlesham, but one of the things he said was he wouldn't be at all surprised if more documents on Rendlesham surface.
Mm-hmm.
Now, this would be entirely, I must stress this, entirely innocent and not part of some conspiracy on the part of the MOD to suddenly produce documents that have been kept hidden and out of public sight for years.
Mm-hmm.
He says that what generally happens is because there is an increase in publicity, for Rendlesham,
mm-hmm.
There'll be more media demands on the MOD to supply background information. And what he says is what often happens is that documents are misfiled.
Yeah.
He says he's done it himself many mm-hmm. times. And he says he wouldn't be surprised if, as a result of the likely increase in publicity, documents are discovered misappropriately, in areas where they shouldn't be.
Yeah. Well, yeah, let's hope so, because there have been strange things going on in the forests there for centuries.
Indeed. Indeed.
A place of great paranormal activity.
Yep.
Yep.
Stay true. Also, the MOD has deep regrets about the way that investigation was carried out.
Do they?
Oh, yes. Quite. You could hear the tension in Nick's voice when he was describing that.
Oh, my. Well, I look forward to the next few weeks on the UFO Updates email list. Stuart, we have to go, unfortunately. Thank you, sir.
My pleasure, and thank you.
And we have to spend an hour together sometime soon, because we never get through everything that needs to be said.
Okay,
good night.
All right.
On the phone tonight, Victor Vigiani is with us. Also, Robert Salas, who is the Deputy Missile Combat Crew Commander below ground in the Launch Control Center for Intercontinental Ballistic Missiles at Malmstrom Air Force Base. And, Robert, take us back to that day, March 16th in 1967. What went down?
Well, it was early in the morning, and I was up on duty, and my commander was taking a little nap, as you will, and I really don't remember the time, but it was still evening, it was still dark out, and the guard calls down and says they've been observing some strange lights above the site, and it wasn't a prank call because he was talking about these strange maneuvers these lights were going through, and I didn't think much of it at the time. I even said, "You mean like flying saucers?" And he said, "Well, he couldn't explain it." But basically, I hung up the phone and went back to my reading, and then about 5 minutes later, he calls back, and this time he's extremely agitated, very frightened. He's shouting into the phone, and he's screaming that there's a glowing red object hovering outside the front gate. It's an oblong, saucer-shaped object, and it's glowing red, and it's about just above the front gate. And he's got all the guards out there and wanted me to tell him what to do next. Of course, I was pretty shocked by that, so I think I told him to secure the perimeter fence, and then he quickly said he had to go. He hung up the phone, and so I went to wake up my commander and tell him about the two phone calls I'd received. And just as I was telling him about the calls, my missiles started shutting down. We lost just about all of them, as I recall. My commander, who's still with us, he lives in Las Vegas. His name is Fred Mywald, but he remembers that we lost eight. I thought we lost just about all of them, but by lost, I mean they went into a no-go condition or an unlaunchable condition.
Mm.
All kinds of klaxons and lights are going on, and the missiles are going down one by one.
Robert, here.
Mm-hmm.
When the people that are monitoring these missiles, these highly sophisticated units, when they get information that they're actually incapacitated, how do they receive this? Like what tells them these things are no longer viable?
Well, we've got a light panel, and the missiles are normally all green. There's a green light. It's a control panel,
mm-hmm.
and it very rarely do we lose. Did we ever in my 3 years there lose more than one missile at a time?
Mm-hmm.
And so this was a completely extraordinary circumstance where we lost just about all of them, and we do have some query information. We can query on the cause for the shutdown, and
mm-hmm.
as I recall, the cause was guidance and control system failure. We also got a couple of security lights, lights that show incursion, security incursion at the launch facility itself. That's where the missiles are actually located.
Now, when you say an incursion, does that mean somebody slid the hatch back at the top of the tube that these
no.
things fired out of?
good question, Errol.
No. That's not really a hatch. It's a huge door. It's very, very heavy.
Mm-hmm.
And it's, matter of fact, when just before the missile is launched, would be launched, that door is blown off with explosives.
Mm-hmm.
Before the launch. So, no, security incursions were relatively frequent. It just means that there were the fence surrounding the missile itself, there was some disturbance. At times we'd get jackrabbits get through somehow through mm-hmm. the fence and would set off an alarm.
Trip off the sensors, yeah.
Yeah, sensors for motion sensors, right.
So to have this many units taken down all at once is very unusual.
Extremely unusual. Yeah. I was there for 3 years as a launch as a deputy as a launch officer. And
were they taken down all at once or in a sequence that you could perceive?
They seemed to be going in a sequence. Bing, 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 bing. As I recall, but. Not number one, number two, number three, but they'd go, they'd go in some kind of a sequence, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So these were knocked out basically. How long were they out of commission for?
Well, we were relieved later that morning, and my understanding is they were out most of the day.
Wow.
They had to bring crews out, and because of a guidance and control system failure, they had to realign the targeting system or the guidance system for each missile, and so that took some work.
So was it clear, Robert, that the shutdown of these units and whatever sequence that occurred was coterminous or in coincidence was with the sighting of the so-called objects that, you know, sir, we've got something out here and something's happening. Was the sequence of the shutdown coincidental with the sightings of what happened?
Yes, absolutely. The missiles started shutting down within a minute of, you know, I hung up the phone with the guard and woke up my commander and started to tell him about the calls, but then the missiles started shutting down. So it was about a minute after I hung up, and when I went back upstairs and talked to the guard later on, he said it was there, during the missile shutdowns.
Who else beyond yourself and the people in your command saw these things, and to whom else were these things reported?
Well, of course, our procedure was to report to the command post, so we did report it. And in fact, when my commander reported it, and this is where Echo Flight comes in, he turned to me and said, the command post said the same thing happened at Echo Flight. So Echo Flight is about, I'd say, 30 to 40 miles away mm-hmm. from us. And supposedly, while our incident was happening, the Echo incident was also happening.
Simultaneously?
Well, there's a question about that.
Okay.
It may have happened previous. I just didn't get that kind of detailed information at the time. It may have happened previously.
Mm-hmm.
But Echo Flight is very well documented. That shutdown is very well documented. We, of course, went through the Freedom of Information Act and retrieved a lot of documents,
mm-hmm.
and we've also contacted quite a few witnesses documenting all this. So it's all documented in my book, but we feel we do have a strong case because of the witnesses and the documentation.
In some of the dialogue that I've read about this, now I stand to be corrected on the nature of the dialogue, but some of the dialogue states that make sure the site is secure and I'll phone the commander post. Sir, I've got to go now. One of the guys just got injured. What does that mean, Robert? Can you just expand on that for us?
Yeah, I do specifically recall him saying one of the security guards, the guards that was injured. Now, I want to make this clear. He was not injured as a result of the UFO firing a weapon mm-hmm. at him. He was injured trying to scale the fence.
Okay.
Either
he was scared.
Either trying
he was
to
scared. Escape. Yeah. Okay.
It's
that's
a very frightening experience.
Yes. Yes.
I can understand that.
Robert Salas is with us. He was the deputy missile combat crew commander below ground in the Launch Control Center for Intercontinental Ballistic Missiles at Malmstrom Air Force Base when they were shut down by a UFO or a couple of UFOs lurking 20 to 30 feet above the perimeter fence there. And the United States Air Force says that UFOs are not a threat to United States security. The book is Faded Giant, written by Robert Salas, who's our guest this evening, and James Klotz. An amazing book, an amazing story. The book is a first-hand account of the Malmstrom Air Force Base missile UFO incident, as told by Robert Salas and other witnesses. The post-incident investigation involving the Air Force and defense contractors was never able to determine the source of the missile shutdowns that happened that day of March 16th, 1967. And if you're a regular listener to this program, you will have heard Robert Salas's voice a few times over the last couple of 3 years. Robert Salas is on the line with us from his home in California, and from his home out there in the wilds of Mississauga is Victor Vigiani. So, Robert, you said before the break that there were, and you had gathered together a number of witnesses. You were, what, a captain back in those days?
Well, at the time of the shutdowns, I was a lieutenant.
A lieutenant.
By the end of my three-year tour, I was a captain.
Okay. So there's yourself, a captain. I think somewhere in there there's a Boyd Coynel there somewhere as well.
Well, Fred Marwold, my commander in the capsule, who was also a lieutenant at the time, but later on he became, I believe, a base commander off at Air Force Base, and he was a full colonel off at Air Force Base, the Strategic Air Command headquarters. Walter Fiegel was a lieutenant colonel, retired as a lieutenant colonel. He was the deputy at Echo Flight.
So you have three officers with huge responsibilities at the time and very credible witnesses to what happened at Malmstrom, to both of those flights, the knocking out basically of 20 intercontinental ballistic missiles by, was it one or more UFOs that were reported, Robert?
Well, we had the UFO at our flight right at our facility, and then we did send out a team to one of the sites because we had security lights, like I mentioned.
Mm-hmm.
And that team also saw a UFO hovering over the missile site. Now, at Echo Flight, my understanding is there were observations of UFOs at two of their flights also. So I don't know if it was, I don't think it was the same UFO, but there were multiple sightings of UFOs.
Now,
you have to figure that these people aren't sitting around waiting for UFOs to turn up. They're just doing their job and monitoring things on a daily basis, nightly, and all of a sudden this happens.
Yes.
Yeah, and all out of the blue, literally, these anomalous objects appear and start doing bizarre things to the launch sequence of these highly sophisticated units. How far up the line when this occurred, you had it occur in your watch, how far along the line did this get reported beyond your command?
Well, I'll tell you that we have telexes from SAC headquarters noting, and in the telex itself it says the fact that these shutdowns occurred for no apparent reasons is of dire concern. I'm not sure that's the exact word, but
grave concern
to this command. So it went all the way up to SAC headquarters, I'm sure, and probably above that.
Now, did SAC scramble any fighters in your general direction when all of this went down? Do you know?
Not to my knowledge, no. Now, there was an incident in 1975, also at Malmstrom Air Force Base, where UFOs were sighted, and they did scramble interceptors against it. And that's documented in a NORAD telex, which we have a copy of. I'm not sure we put that in our book, but we do have a copy of that telex where NORAD did scramble fighters against it.
But you have all kinds of paperwork to substantiate your experiences at Malmstrom.
Yes, we do.
Under the Freedom of Information Act, yeah?
Yes, and I want to give full credit to James Klotz, my co-author. He was the prime investigator on this, and it was through his constant effort that we got these documents. So I can't say enough about Mr. Klotz.
And James has been around the UFO world for many, many years, and the digital part of that for longer than I have, and I've been around for a few years. And he was one of the first people online with the BBS that was distributing UFO information back in the early 90s and maybe even earlier. So I hope that James feels better real soon. We'd hope to have him on the program.
Well, a lot of questions, right? Could I just ask you, you've gone through all of this, and I know you went through it as a launch commander. What are your own personal feelings? You know, you deal with this information you have in possession, probably, in my estimation, some of the most critical witness information available on this whole topic. Mm-hmm. How do you deal with this, knowing this on a day-to-day basis? Like, it's to me, it's just phenomenal. Like, how do you deal with knowing all of this and living your life?
Well, to excuse me, I've been vocal about this since 1994. I've spoken on some of the talk radio shows before, back in 94, and I've spoken publicly about this for 10 years. Matter of fact, I tell my students, I'm still a high school teacher, but I tell my students this story. I have no qualms about telling this story, and stating outright that there's no question in my mind, absolutely no question in my mind, that we've been visited by beings not from this planet. And I still get goose pimples thinking about it, because it's certainly there's absolutely no question in my mind.
Well, good for you. And God, God bless you for coming forward in the way you have. You have a lot of courage, my friend, a lot of courage.
Well, thank you. Thank you.
Robert, we need to go, unfortunately, but thank you for being with us tonight and once again sharing your experiences there. If you would like to read more about what went on that day at Malmstrom Air Force Base and the missile silos, Faded Giant is the book by Robert Salas, our guest, and James Klotz, with a foreword by Raymond E. Fowler. And you can get yourselves to a place where you can order that book online by going to tonight's program listing at virtuallystrange.net and clicking Faded Discs.
Thank you very much, Earl.
A Faded Giant, Faded Discs. Thank you, Robert.
Thank you.
Robert Salas, as Victor said, God bless you for coming forward and telling the story like it is, the way the Air Force in the United States doesn't seem to want to. We shall break and we shall return, and Alfred Lemberg will take us home. On the line from way down there in Alabama is a regular contributor to this program, Alfred. That's your cue, Alfred. Alfred Lemberg. I was waiting for the mini putt-putt foghorn. There you go. Alfred.
We may have that.
Oh, okay.
As the program wears on. You know, it's become quite a tradition, I understand. Yes, you know what? Canada just, you know, rises and sets on it, I know.
Yes, we do. It completes our Saturday nights. That's
oh, yes. Hey, I need to go to bed hearing that. So, bombastic? What? What bombastic? Jeez. Man, I mean, you know, I can't tolerate a sneer.
Boy, I didn't forward you that email, and I thought, oh, now I've said it on the radio, and that's one of the first things that Lemberg is going to mention.
No, you did. But bombastic? Jeez, I'm not bombastic, and I am quite cuddly, and I you know, I mean, hey, have dinner with me, and I guarantee you I will have you spitting imported beer out your nose.
Oh, my God. How do you put that together with bombastic and a rare steak? I mean, my gosh.
There you go.
Yum.
How are you?
I just get better and better. Victor, you?
I'm just fine, actually.
Good.
Fine, yeah.
Well, there we go. There sure is a lot going on and not a lot going on. Have you noticed, Alfred, how things have chilled out on the list in the last week or so?
Well, there is that, and then there is also the Douglas Kern article that everybody seems to be talking about the subject of UFOs and the concept of UFOs being invalidated by the Internet, of all things. And, you know, I thought that was a little crazy because, for my money, the Internet has done nothing but continue to facilitate and energize and keep me interested, and it keeps me in contact with the like-minded folks that I think have a degree more efficacious than is usual, you know. So, I mean, the Internet has done nothing but always energize it.
Well, you know, looking at the number of reads, I used to think it was a good day if there were maybe 4,000 reads at the UFO Updates Archive. And over the last year, those numbers have climbed and climbed and climbed. Right now, we're averaging about 24,000 reads a day of the UFO Updates email list.
And no one's interested in this stuff.
No, of course they're not. It's, you know, it's a dying fascination.
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm only in it for the money.
Yeah, well, you and me both.
You know, we don't have a lot of time this evening.
No, we have 6 minutes.
And I would really like to talk about the UFO sighting that I had last week.
You had a UFO sighting last week?
Well, yes, I did. I reported it to friends of mine already, and I have written about it. So it's pretty obvious to me that you're not keeping up with my blog.
I'm trying to keep up with my list.
Go ahead. Tell us about it.
Yes.
Okay, here is the situation. It was about 05:11 hours, and we're talking Central Standard Time.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm standing out in the backyard, and I'm looking about 40 degrees elevation into the sky, just right where I happen to be looking. This light blinks on, and I see this at about 290 degrees or, you know, in a westerly, northwesterly direction. And the light blinks on, travels to, about 10 degrees from north to south at about 3 degrees per second. And I'm thinking, oh, satellite, right? You know, I mean, that's the first thing mm-hmm. that pops into my mind is, it's moving, it's steady, it's steadily moving. I'm thinking, okay, it's a satellite. And then abruptly, to my astonishment, and due west, mind you, this thing made one of those protoplasm smearing 90-degree right turns and flew for another degree and went out.
Oh, my gosh. And how long ago was this?
This was Thursday.
Thursday.
Oh, my goodness. It went backwards, basically.
No, it made a hard 90-degree turn.
Okay.
I mean hard, protoplasm spurring hard. I mean there was no, you know, honking it over for the big turn around, you know, going, 90 degrees. No, there was none of that. It was just blink, and it was traveling in the indicated direction. Astonishing.
Amazing.
Yeah, I saw something like that one day in the daylight, a gray disc, motoring along parallel to the ground, and then suddenly, and it was moving forward at one moment and then straight up and up through the clouds above it. I still can't believe that this thing pulled that maneuver. You know, I don't understand the physics
of that.
I think it's
the same thing. You know, Errol, it's the same thing with anyone who sees these things that does this. You see it and you visualize it, you internalize it, and then you say, well, maybe it was something else.
Yeah.
You know, maybe it was something else.
No, it couldn't have done what I just saw it do.
Yeah, exactly. And, well, I don't know.
I have had and written about just such an occurrence.
Mm-hmm.
The same kind of thing. I'm standing out in my backyard again, and this is several years ago now, but I'm out there with two age 64 pilots and an Army astronaut candidate. And we looked up into the sky and saw a little black strip flying diagonally and flashing a sequence of light from one wing to the other. And, I mean, airplanes just don't do that.
Yeah.
And we're all looking up there, and all professional aviators and instructor pilots and instrument flight examiners, you know, and we look up and go, oh, yeah, well, it must be something. Hey, pop me another beer over there, you know. It's just like self-hypnosis to cognitively disassociate with strange things that you're seeing.
It's amazing how that happens when you happen to be with a couple of pilots and
did I swear during that thing, it occurs to me that, you know, I started to freewheel, and when I was talking, I didn't say anything you had to bleep me on, did I?
When?
Just now, that last thing that I said, because it occurred to me that, you know, I might have made some kind of expletive.
Oh, good, good. And everybody around here missed it, and now you've made it stand out so people will go back. Now, it's like Bubba down there is backing up the file already, saying that did Lemberg say anything bad? Yes. Yes, did you mouse over your picture at the program listing?
Oh, I did that right off the bat.
Good for you.
I mean, I was just so, it's just so neat, you know, to have something like that happen just completely unforecast.
Yeah.
Except black and white really adds a few pounds, dude.
No, it doesn't. You look much slimmer in black and white, I'm telling you.
Oh, good Lord.
And that Victor is making strange noises over there. Bring it back up again.
Can I have 30 seconds?
Yeah. Go.
I had a call from an abductee this afternoon, and she wants to, how can I say this, anonymously offer an opportunity for anyone who's had major UFO experiences or an almost experiences to come forward anonymously to email SDI to report these experiences and have them read over
On the program.
On the program.
Mm-hmm.
Anonymously.
Mm.
So I guess what I'm saying is that if there are any people out there who've had anomalous experiences, if you wish to, you know, email strangedaysindeed@sdi.
Virtuallystrange.net.
Exactly.
Yes, we're burning through time here, Victor.
And if you, we will select a couple of these things and read them over the air because...
We've got to go, Victor. We've got to go. Yeah, we got 5 seconds left.
That's
Alfred,
it.
Thank you, sir. There we go. Good night, Alfred Lambert. Good night, Victor. We'll see you in studio next week. Alfred, in 2 weeks. We'll talk to you next week. Thank you, Jim Pacheco. Jim Pacheco and Big Daddy Badesige. Good night.
That's this week's edition of Strange Days Indeed, hosted and produced by Errol Bruce Knapp. The executive producer is Dean Mascardelli.